you, Stephen. Congratulations on a graduation, I believe,
Thank
yesterday.
Yes,
great. You were off.
Steve's daughter, Emma, graduated from Dayton, Ohio.
University of Dayton.
University of Dayton.
Not the whole city, but
not
just the
city
school,
of Dayton. That'd be ridiculous.
Great weekend. And now they all load up and go to Daytona for a week.
Because it's alphabetically next to Dayton?
I think it is. Right.
Is that why?
Oh, yeah.
That'll be fun.
Don't they do that in spring break? Now they do it afterwards?
It's a weird thing. I don't know why. It's actually school. The school sets it up. If you're over 21, and you go down to Daytona right after graduation.
That's a nice thing. Was it emotional, Steve? You know, when we take our kids to college for the first time, it's very emotional. Is the graduation as or more emotional?
Well, it is for me, but yeah. I mean, I cry at cereal commercials.
Yeah.
I always cry now. I cry because Pat McGann's in the studio.
Well, Pat ties into everything we have mentioned, because you mentioned cereal commercials. Pat is currently in a Kellogg's cereal commercial.
He's great.
You mentioned University of Dayton. Pat, where did you go to college?
I went to the University of Dayton.
How about that?
No kidding.
I'm a flyer.
Wow.
And I could speak on the history of the Daytona trip. They used to shut down campus for spring break.
Yeah. Right?
So originally we never had a spring break.
They still don't. They still have just a short or a long weekend.
And then when I went there, because St. Patrick's Day got so out of control.
Yeah.
It was like such a party week.
Yeah.
So they started kicking us off campus. Went to spring break. But spring break never really gained traction at Dayton. We always did this trip at the end of the year.
Uh-huh.
The whole school goes to Daytona.
And what if you can't afford it?
Well, I mean, it's not the whole entire school.
You made it sound like, many. You know.
It's just like no one really did spring break. No one was going down.
They waited till the end of the year.
Yeah, they waited till the end
of the year. And so it's weird because everyone's graduating. They're moving out of their house, but they're not saying goodbye to each other yet.
No, it's not over yet, Steve.
All of Emma's friends are, you know, they're all still with her in Florida.
Glomming on to it, never going to let go.
That's right.
Yeah. Huh.
And turns out student loans pay for the trip. No, I'm kidding.
That would be a nice twist. Pat, good to see you. How are you?
Good to see you guys. I'm great. Yeah, good to be back.
You're here for a very important reason. You figure into Wendy's life.
I was watching a video of you that I saw on Facebook, I believe, a little excerpt of your material, and you hurt me and made me laugh all in the same breath.
Aren't those always your goals?
That's what I'm trying to do.
Yep.
I'm trying to be hurtful.
But make people laugh. Yeah. Right.
I have questioned a type of blouse that is available these days that is called the cold shoulder.
Right.
And I've given people the cold shoulder my whole life, but this is just, I forgot to wear it today. I have one. I will never buy another one because of you. It's a beautiful little blousey top like this, but then the shoulder is cut out and just your shoulder is exposed.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that a lot.
Yeah, the cold shoulder.
Yeah, the cold shoulder.
Which the joke I do, I call it open shoulder, which my wife was giving me like crap about. Like, it's called a cold shoulder shirt. Well, across the country, like, they call them like peekaboo shirt. They call it the because I was doing it as a cold shoulder.
Yeah.
And some people were like, what is he talking about? So I say open shoulder, the open shoulder shirt. And it's just like
they're stupid.
It's just the rage.
I bought one because I thought it was new and fashionable. I've worn it a couple of times, but I didn't love it. And then when I saw your video, I will never, ever, ever buy another one.
What do you say about it that's so damning?
I just
damning?
Say it's like everyone's like, you cannot get away from us. Like the new uniform. Like they're like, oh, you're 38? Here's your open shoulder shirt.
Right. But
get on out there.
There should be someone giving women clearance to wear them because...
Do you like them?
Well, I mean, on some women, but they're like midriffs. They're not made for everyone.
Yeah, but at least a midriff, you're showing something.
No,
with a low top, I'm showing something.
I think they look good on everybody.
Now you're backpedaling.
No, I'm just making fun of the
Mary,
shirt.
Sandberg, do you like them?
They walk around and they're like, oh, here's a part of my body I'm confident about.
Yeah.
Check this out.
Yeah, I'm supposed to
right
wear
here.
One. I'm supposed to wear
Don't
one.
Don't do it, Mary.
Well, I'm not supposed to, but I bought a dress for my son's graduation on
Pat's
Saturday, and it's a dress with the cold shoulder. I can't wear it. You know,
Sandberg,
yes, you can.
What are your thoughts on this?
I don't like them because I think they say 2017/2018.
Oh.
You know, you're going to look at photos of yourself with that and say, oh, I know what was popular then.
Yeah.
I'm
and it's
a
like,
year behind.
It's fake sexy.
It is
like,
fake
it's not
sexy.
Cleavage. It's not an open back. It's like your shoulder peeking.
I say, look at my boobs. Don't look at my shoulders.
Wendy's shirt literally says that.
And it's one of those. I feel
it's a tattoo you can read on her shoulder.
And my fried egg shirt.
It looks cute on like 4-year-old girls.
It does.
Just like jumpers look cute on 4-year-olds.
Right,
I don't like jumpers on adult women either. So
what about the craze
no
of these short overalls that
are
coming
like a romper,
back?
Like a
romper. Yeah, I don't. Anything I have to unzip and take all the way off to use the restroom is for an infant. It's not for a 42-year-old woman.
Look what you started, Pat.
All right, so
I'm not into the overall shorts either. I wore them when I was like in sixth grade.
I did too.
So I'm not bringing my fashion back. But
all right, so what do we do with Mary Vandeveld, who has a graduation party to wear? But see, now
Mary,
a dress is different, and you can pull it off, Mary, because you have sexy shoulders.
Very nice shoulders.
I work out.
Wear it. I'm not. Yeah. I don't say don't wear them. The joke. I just am making fun of.
I've never worn one before. That's the only one I think I own, and I just bought it for the occasion. So
Pat,
it's hard
ironic.
To get away from them. They're everywhere.
They are everywhere. Everywhere.
It's ironic you make fun of them, Pat, because don't you have a kiosk set up outside the comedy club after the show where you sell them?
Yeah, sell them.
That's crazy.
Yeah, the Pat McGann cold shoulder.
Yeah. It has my website on it. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break, and then more with the Tim Gunn of comedy, Pat McGann. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
My wife and her friends, you know, they all show up in their open shoulder shirts. Yeah, when did that become the uniform? Everyone with the open shoulder shirts. Like, oh, you're 38? Here's your open shoulder shirt. Get on out there. Show everyone what you're working with. Now every woman's walking around. Hey, check it out. Yeah, check this out right here. Here's a part of my body I'm confident about. Yeah. Is that turning you on? Look at that. This is where the doctor wipes when I get a shot. Yeah, that's a tetanus scar right there. I can't get TB.
You are so funny, Pat McGann.
A lot of comedians are afraid to do the shoulder humor.
Yeah, I know,
but not you.
I don't dance around that stuff. I go right at it.
You're like the Lenny Bruce of the upper torso.
People don't want to talk about certain issues, but I just go.
You're not afraid.
So has your wife given all her cold shoulder shirts away?
No. She still wears them.
Still
rocking them.
Because they call it different things in different parts of the country, when you go to a club, do you have to go, hey, this is a weird question, but do you call it cold shoulder, open shoulder, peekaboo? What's your local
I've asked like off stage, like what people refer to, but now I just universally just say open shoulder shirt.
Yeah.
Because I do the, you know, I kind of do the cutout, like show you. People know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Some of them are really cut out, and some of them are just a tiny little opening, so I don't really understand
a little
it.
Slit. A little
bit.
And why can't men wear them, Pat? I think we'd look so good in them. What's wrong with men wearing those shirts?
They can. I mean, the tank, you can wear a tank.
Oh, I guess so.
I'm surprised guys didn't come up with that first.
Yeah. Ripping it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because didn't you guys used to rip your sleeves off to make the guns look bigger?
Some guys did. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, when, like, remember Tom Kleinschmidt?
Yeah.
He would cut the sleeves off.
He liked to cut the sleeves. Tom Kleinschmidt.
He played for DePaul. He was a stud.
Basketball player.
Gordon Tech.
You were sick last week.
I was.
And Wendy and I were very concerned, and we made a card for you.
Come on.
Yeah.
Let me see it.
It's in Bill's car.
It's in my car. I'll bring it out later. What was wrong? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good now. I mean, you only know this because you invited me to come in last week. I wasn't like, you know, putting it out there like I was so sick. I was just struggling. I don't know if I get like food poisoning or some kind of virus.
Oh, no.
You know, one of those six when you're just like...
Didn't you also have
there was something going around last week, I have to tell you, and I'm still not 100%.
Yeah, I don't feel like I am either. Like, I'm still bouncing back, but
I'm
eating.
Wendy refuses to cook her meat.
No, that was at a restaurant.
Oh.
That was at a restaurant that their pork was cold.
Oh,
let me just say that. It's not cold.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was cooked, but cold, so part of that could have been an emotional food poisoning, I'm not sure.
Yeah, mentally, you
know,
talk yourself into it.
Right.
Maybe.
I couldn't trace it back to anything food-related, so maybe I just had some
But there was a virus going around.
Pat, what if, this is hypothetical, but what if they said to you, Pat, we've seen your tapes, we've seen your videos, we love your work, we want you to host the Correspondents' Dinner next year, what would your answer be?
Oh, I'd love to do that.
You would take it?
Yeah.
See, he is the only one.
In a minute.
Bill says that is the worst gig ever.
Really?
Who would want to do it? There's your answer.
You would take it.
Will you also run for president? Because we wonder who would run for president.
No, I would love to do a gig like that. I think I would.
Because it's so high profile?
Yeah, and just I like that atmosphere, like that setup. I like to do like a roasty style.
Yeah.
You're perfect for that.
You would be very good at it.
I think I would like that.
Let's put his name in.
All right. We'll throw your name into it. It's up to Wendy and I.
I mean, it is. This last one was so overanalyzed. I mean,
when
just
in reality,
ridiculous.
Michelle Wolf said the same thing every other host
exactly.
has ever said.
Yeah. She did a great job.
Yeah.
I mean, she did a really good job. It's just like this, the sensitivity the radar is just so far up.
Is it because she was a woman? Because I brought that up and people said no. I kind of think it was.
I'm sure that's a factor, definitely. Yeah. I think it's always
think
a factor,
it is, yeah.
whether people would ever admit it or not. I mean, it's almost like subconscious.
Yeah.
You know? Some people don't like their women like that. I mean, really. Being
There's
a little...
lot of truth to that. I think a lot of, you know...
Still to this day.
Women comedians have a lot more to overcome than guy comedians.
Yeah.
Like, no doubt. That's without question.
Well, they always say, women comics over the years have always told me that if you go up there and you're funny, the other women in the audience feel threatened, like you're trying to move in on their territory, their guy somehow, which I never really thought about.
What?
Can that be true?
Well, I think that's one of the things they have to overcome is they have to overcome the audience. You know?
Yeah.
It's just...
What's wrong with everyone these days?
I don't know why I would never even think about something like that. Last year, you did a New Year's Eve special, a very funny New Year's Eve special. Have they talked to you about doing another one, or are you just going to rerun last
year's? We just started talking again, and I think it's possible.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I got to set something up there and see if we're going to do it again. I'd love to do it again. It was fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It looked good.
Chicago
flavor. You did a nice job.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I would like to give it another shot.
Yeah.
And you just wrapped up a while back with Sebastian Maniscalco.
Yeah, we're on a little bit of a hiatus now. I'm going to get back with him in the fall, but we just did quite a run, like, through the fall, culminated at Radio City.
Oh, how was that?
His Netflix special. It was cool.
Yeah.
De Niro was there.
Oh, was he really? My God. Yeah. Really?
Wait, Pat, Robert De Niro?
Robert De Niro.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. Bobby D.
Robert De Niro was waiting, speaking
of feel
yeah,
like
that's
I'm
a
just,
song.
I can say this because I'm not name dropping. I mean, I'm name dropping, but I'm not because it's not my show. I'm just along for the ride, man.
Yeah.
I'm just like,
did that make
Sebastian's
you nervous?
Coattails, and Sebastian shot a movie, a Scorsese movie with Robert De Niro. So he came out.
Did you meet him? Please tell
I did
me
get
you did.
To meet him.
What
yeah.
was that like?
It was awesome. Got a picture with him and
got to talk to him
really
a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit.
He was very friendly. His wife, super friendly. He had like a little crew there, like three or four of them.
Yeah.
It was small group, but he was very kind. You could just tell, you know, you get like a vibe from somebody.
Yeah,
like they're
yeah.
either warm or they're not.
Right.
I want to be in warm. His crew. Pat, are they taking applications?
Yeah, man.
I would love to be. I would like to hang out with him.
That would you would be their chim chim. I gotta be honest.
You know what?
Make
I'd, be, I'd be so fine with
know.
That. I would even sell him that. I'd go. I could be your chim chim in your speed racer like crew. Yeah, that would work out for everybody.
I did want to like. Wouldn't that be funny though? To needle him like that, like. Like when I'm getting the picture, just like, dude, I loved you in Rocky and Bullwinkle. Just name the most obscure
right.
film.
I don't know if you've done other film work, but that movie changed my life. You just say
me.
That to him. Right. When you were Fearless Leader, you came on and I'm like, this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
we should
a
do
legend,
more movies.
Though.
That's
well,
excellent.
We just wanted to say hello to you. I wanted to thank you for, I guess, enlightening me. I will never buy one of those tops again.
See, that's not my message, though. You can buy them.
I don't want to. I was on the fence. It's one of those things, if I ask my husband, then I'm not sure that I like it. If I go, what do you think? Then I'm unsure. If it's something I love, I don't care what he thinks.
Right.
So I was on the fence with these cold shoulder tops. Now I will never buy another one. I think you're saving a lot of women.
It's just funny that that's a thing that a bit that has resonated because... I've gotten more comments about this bit. Like,
you're going to get, there's going to be brutes from Nordstrom's in your house beating you up.
Now
you're
I'm
ruining
like,
our sales.
Now I'm like, what else can I talk about fashion wise? You call me the Tim Gunn of comedy.
You're the Tim Gunn of comedy.
Wait, who's Tim Gunn?
He's the guy, he like, no matter what you wear, Tim Gunn is not happy about it. No matter what. He can tell you to wear
the,
something, you'll put it on.
It's like the project,
so.
Project Runway.
Oh,
Runway,
okay.
Yeah.
I just know Mr. Blackwell.
The late great.
I know, who really had great things to say about our wardrobes.
Yes. He said we dressed like we were doing a summer production of Peter Pan or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And me, I looked like I shopped at St. Vincent de Paul.
Yeah, how about that?
That was it. Yep. It was a
That's
flattering
good.
Moment.
Very nice.
You have a couple of zany shows coming up?
Yeah, I'm going to be at St. Charles the weekend of the 24th. Zany St. Charles, and then in June I got a whole week downtown at they're just celebrating their 40th anniversary
at
down
Zany's.
On Wells Street, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm there like the week like June 11th through the 17th through Father's Day, like that week.
Oh, excellent.
I'm there all week.
Good.
PatMcGannComedy.com. White Sox are starting to show some improvement.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? They're in a lot of games. I know they're not winning them, but I feel like watch the game through seven innings and see how you feel.
They've
you
lost
know?
So many games by one run
yeah.
and a bunch of games by six runs. But
it's one
but
or
the
six.
One run. That,
if you
that
look
hurts.
Back, I mean, the jump the Cubs made from their
yes
huge
right. It was one season
yep.
like that. I think it's going to happen quickly.
Right,
like it will be a quick turnaround.
Yeah, they'll be good.
This farm system, those guys are still doing great.
They would.
So it's exciting.
Good to see you, Pat.
Good Thanks to see you guys.
Hope you feel better.
It's Pat McGann. He'll feel better.
Hope you feel better, too.
Thank you.
Oh, that's so nice of you.
I made you a card.
Hey, that's the card we gave you. You just crossed your own name off.
I left it in my Uber.
Thanks, Pat. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill. It's Wendy. It's WGN, as Steve mentioned. Pat McGann was here. A lot of women are relating to that off-the-shoulder, cold-shoulder style that's going on. Mary Vandeveld just purchased a dress like that for a graduation party, and now I feel bad that we're kind of ripping on it.
Oh, I don't feel bad.
Yeah, really?
I don't feel,
You're still going to wear it, though.
It, Mary.
I am going to wear it because I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, see, you know what? Honestly, that is key. If you love it, then it's worth wearing. I was unsure whether or not I liked the top. I have one. Somebody said, most stupid fashion piece in the longest time, the cold shoulder.
You got a text that said this?
Those shirts are so ugly, says another one.
Oh.
Well, this is a dress, so I feel better.
Well, they're not ugly. They're omnipresent. I mean, they're made in so many different ways. It's not like it's one shirt. I mean,
right.
So many different clothing items now have holes in their shoulders.
And these pants.
I love the ripped jeans.
Yeah, these have been around before, right? This isn't a new
thing.
Not
really.
No?
There's been a halter top, but this is like a halter top, and then there's a sleeve below it.
Right.
It's just...
And that's
it's an example of how the fashion industry tricks you women into buying new stuff.
Right.
I know.
This is one of those examples where it comes out, and now everyone's got to have them, and then... In 2 or 3 years?
That's what Sandberg said, and that's what I agree with. It's like it looks so dated. If you look back at pictures, you'll go, oh, that was 2017,
yeah.
2018. Someone said, oh, I so agree with Pat McGann. I'm 60. I have friends that wear them. Hmm. Awful. Hmm. I do like my shoulders, but I am not 16. Thanks.
So who are these targeted toward? Is it 16-year-olds?
Everyone.
All women are targeted in this.
But I feel like, hey, if you're in decent shape and, you know, my shoulders are okay, I guess. I don't have, they look better on, I think, women with broader shoulders.
Oh.
And I don't have, but I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it's not
I'm
like.
I'm always a year behind in fashion.
It's not like culottes for men. You know, I mean,
what, those were in style?
No, but.
They're going to be, Wendy. Wait.
And anyone who wears them is subject to ridicule.
Right.
These shirts are fine, but not for everyone. That's, I guess, what Mary's saying.
Well, I have one. I'm not buying another one. Mary, I don't know that you're going to buy a bunch of dresses, but there's a different type of shirt that someone has texted us, and I forgot about this because I have one of these as well. The latest shirt that I cannot stand, this one says totally 2018. It's the choker neck top. It is like a low V-neck blouse.
So there's a cutout.
Well, it's a low V-neck, and then there's the very top of it has a little tie that you tie in the back, so it looks like it's the same material.
Yeah.
It's a choker that goes around your neck.
See,
and I have one of those too. That I'll wear it tomorrow.
How long have you had it?
Probably 4 months.
Right. So they sit in a room and they say, what can we slightly alter, and then have influencers wear it to make it popular, and then everyone will buy our stuff. It's a shirt. You've got lots of shirts.
But here's the I can't believe I belong to the Stitch Fix thing where it's like trendy things. They send you 5 items of clothing.
If they're still popular by the time you take them out of the package, you get to wear them. Is that how it works?
No, but this is something I kind
no
of enjoy.
Because they'll be
no,
dated.
You can return it. And what I like about it is I go to the store and I kind of look at the same things, usually black, earth tones, denim, things like that. This is a different set of eyes looking for clothes for me, and you fill out like a different style, your type of fashion. So they sent that, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of unique. Same with the cold shoulder top. And I'm like, oh, this is interesting.
So once you fill out this form that says the kind of clothes you normally go for, do they send you things that are like that, or do they go, no, we're gonna mix the deck up and send you stuff that isn't like that?
Well, you have to decide, and they do have Stitch Fix for men. They just started it up. I know you've been clothes shopping lately.
Yeah.
So you don't need it.
Yeah. We went to Jay Riggins. It's nice.
You fill out this style form that says, you know, how often do you wear dresses? And I put only on special occasions.
Yeah.
What do you dress mainly? And I'm like, casual.
Yeah.
So then you go through pictures of things and it's like, do you like this type of top? No, I would never wear that. So you get a stylist. Mine is Emily, and she kind of gets to know me. And
Emily's a real person, or is it an amalgam of others?
I don't know. I don't. I don't. Who cares? She writes me little nice notes. She picked out this jacket for me, and she said, "You can rock this with blue denim or black denim. It's a gray washed out denim jean jacket." And I'm like, "Thank you, Emily."
Yeah.
And then you just critique. I'm kind of
right. It's really Boris who lives in Irkutsk, Russia.
I don't care. He has good taste. And I'm kind of rude to Boris when it's like, you know, I say I don't really like T-shirts. I don't wear them. And so if I get a T-shirt, I'm like, what did I tell you, Boris?
But don't you think it's like, you know, when you call a customer service number and they've outsourced it to another country and they go, hello, it's Reggie Jackson. And you go, you're not Reggie Jackson.
But why do I care who it is? I believe it is that person.
I think they're just selling an image of some woman that's working very hard to make you look good when it's probably a different person every time. They just look up your file. You don't think?
They could be.
Yeah.
Why do you have to ruin things for me?
I know that you're very idealistic and you like to think there's a woman going, I hope that Wendy liked what I sent her. But it's just Steve and I. I mean, we're getting the mail.
No, because I like the stuff they send. If it were you and Steve, I wouldn't be like.
So what's your little friend's name?
Emily. Yeah.
Emily, right. So I don't want to, you know.
Yes, you do. So go ahead.
No, I'm just trying to think of, you know, Helga or something.
No, can I tell you that the first person ever, when I first started Stitch Fix, I can't remember her name. I found out later she's the CEO. And I'm like, she's the one who does the first one because they want to wow you, doing it.
We talked about this.
Yes, yeah. So I don't believe it's Boris or Helga.
So you do believe it was the CEO?
You know what? I don't even care. I hate you both.
What do you think the chances are?
Who cares? I like what they send me. I don't care.
I love it. I wish I could do it too. It's kind of pricey, but isn't it?
Some of it is. If you keep all five items, you get like 30% off. It's a $20 styling fee. If you don't like something, you're out the $20 because you send it back. If you buy even one item, they take the $20 off.
Yeah.
It just saves me time.
I'd like to try it. It might be fun.
Oh, no, the boys don't think you should marry because Helga and Boris don't know your style.
Well, do you send them a picture of you?
I connect it to my Pinterest page, and then I put styles that I like.
Oh, look
so
at you.
You're misunderstanding us, I think. I'm happy that it works for you and everything. I'm just
me too.
It's a marketing thing. It's not.
Who cares?
You're the one who brought it up. You said my stylist Penelope or whoever it was.
Her name's Emily, and leave her out of this.
And if you hate to come,
she doesn't exist.
I don't believe you.
She does so.
You don't think there's a chance, Mary, that it's just whoever picks up the ticket, they just pick stuff up, they look at a file, and they go, okay, she likes this color.
No.
You don't think so?
I think they each have their own person. All right. I do.
Whatever. I like what I get. I'll go shopping with you and Steve. You can pick things out. I'll be like, really? More cold shoulder tops?
Not very popular. Will you call me Missy?
It's Emily.
Oh.
All right. A break, some news, more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Bridget Carey joins us right now. Bridget is the senior editor over at CNET. Hi, Bridget. How are you?
Hey, it's going to be a busy Google day.
All right. They're having this huge conference in California. What do we need to know about this Google conference?
Well, they do this every year. They invite all the developers to see, here's what's hot, and consumers get to see, all right, what's coming up next. It's typically a big time to learn about what's coming new in the Android operating system, along with some new hardware. So expect to hear more about what the next Android P, it's called P, they usually give it a name, it's probably called Popsicle. They always give it a candy or, you know, sweet treat name.
Yeah.
But for you and me, what that means is expect to hear more about what it can do. Like, apparently, I've been reading that they're going to get rid of a lot of the navigation you might be used to and changing it up so that there's only one bottom or one bottom button, I should say. And if you want to have shortcuts to jump to things, you might be swiping in different ways or pulling down from the top or pulling up from the bottom. So they're kind of trying to streamline the design of it and probably putting a big focus on something called Google Lens. Google Lens is the ability to point your phone at, let's say, text in another language, and it can instantly translate, point it at an object like the Empire State Building, and it can tell you about the Empire State Building. And I think they need to show more reasons why to care about all their assistant stuff and ways to make your life faster and easier. So, but I think there's a little bit more, too, that we're all kind of curious about in terms of hardware. I think AR and VR, virtual reality, that's going to be another big focus. All the tech companies are crazy about these things lately. So you know, are we going to see a new type of headset? And what is, you know, AR going to do on your phone in the future? These are the questions they're going to answer.
I love all things Google. I really do. That's been my search engine forever. I use Google Maps instead of Apple Maps because I think it's Apple Maps has sent me like in a big circle three times on occasion. I think Google is a good thing. How's the Google phone doing? The Pixel.
We might see a brand new model of that today. It's actually been a pretty hot seller and has been really well received.
Is it getting close to an iPhone, an Apple iPhone?
Yes. In fact, it's getting some better reviews than the Samsung Android phones. So it's way up there, especially with the camera. Everyone's focused on the camera, right? Because all the apps are the same no matter where you go, but it's about the camera. So I think Google's got some interesting questions to answer, too, this time around. There's been rumors about, are they going to have a new music strategy? I think the thing about Google is that they spread out a lot of apps in redundancy. You know, like there's a YouTube way to listen to music, but there's also a Google music streaming service. And are they going to blend this together somehow? And then there's messaging apps. I don't know if you follow this stuff, but Google has way too many ways to send a text message, and consumers don't really care. They just get on their phone and type a text message out. So there's been talk that maybe Google wants to find a better streamlined way around that. Since, you know, if you have an iPhone, you just simply open up your text and you chat, and it doesn't really matter to you what phone the other person has or what service they use, and you can send some cool effects like FaceTime, maybe from Apple to Apple, or like fun and emojis from Apple to Apple. So will Google have something that will entice you that, oh, I have to have an Android phone because that's the way I can message my funny, you know, animation to someone else. And for years, every time they have this event, they're always trying to find a solution to television. They've had some weird hardware that failed, ways to stream on your Android phone, ways to stream on your television. The only thing that survived was something called the Chromecast, the streamer device. Maybe they'll, you know, beef that up a bit. So as a reporter, I look at what they try to keep doing, but they haven't really solved yet. And those are the three kind of areas I'm still looking to see them have answers for.
I'm looking on my computer right now, and I look at a little thing in the upper right-hand corner of my Google search bar, and it says Google Plus. And I remember when Google Plus was supposed to be blowing Facebook out of the water. Does anyone use it anymore, or has it gone to the land of MySpace?
It exists. There are people in niche communities, tech heads, that still use it. But no, this thing is dead. It's gone the way of MySpace. And what Google did is they kind of chopped it up. And they took the Great Photos technology and made it into a separate Photos app. And that has seen a lot of success. So they kind of saw their strengths and admitted defeat on the social media side, but tried to make it so, all right, you want to be able to organize your photos really efficiently. You want to just have us automatically tell you what's good from your whole vacation and can save you time when on lumping people together in an album. They kind of have ways of doing that through, you know, just doing searches. You can actually, if you upload your photos automatically to Google Photos, it's free.
It's free.
It's a great backup. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really a great backup. And you can type in any word, like cat, football, all of a sudden, like the word sports. Every photo you've ever taken at any sporting arena or with the resemblance of sports, no matter how far-fetched it is, like archery and bowling was in there too, you know, like from my photos. It'll just like quickly help you search through things. So they have some great smarts in AI, and it's all about selling it to the consumer on like why we should care and having it in our phone in a different way.
Bridget, go back in time just a few minutes. You were talking about the differences between VR and AR. I know VR is virtual reality. I don't know what AR is. What is that?
Augmented.
You know, you and almost everyone else, every tech company keeps talking about AR and people are confused. AR is where you're looking at your phone screen and you have your camera turned on. So it's like a viewfinder, right?
Yeah.
And some cartoon is like floating on the table that you're taking a picture of or something. Or like if you have a Snapchat, people put masks on their faces, like they put great fake makeup or like fake, I don't know, a hat on. And so it's like a cartoon hat floating on your head. That's augmented reality. It's tracking. It's smart enough to know that, you know, I'm going to put this object on a table virtually in front of you. You snap a photo, you send it. Oh, look, it's cute. but can they, and they've done games with that, you know, play shooting, you know, games where you're in your mom's living room and it looks like you're there. Pokemon with AR, be able to catch the Pokemon in the park. You see the park around you, but the cartoon is just sitting there. So, I think the Google's VR virtual reality, the headset, the totally encompassing, can't see anything else headset, I think that's where they're going to put more of a focus on, because they care also about YouTube, right? Upload that VR content to YouTube and make it a great experience in all of our ways. So, yeah. Because Google's so massive, you know?
All right.
Well, I like my Google Photos. Bill, I actually wanted to tell you about that, because with an iPhone, you have an iCloud account, I would imagine, and things get backed up there. And then they get backed up there, and it goes away, and no one knows how to get it. Google Photos will save all your photos for free. And if you do go over, it's such a minimal amount for a yearly fee to upgrade. That's what I did. So I'm a big fan of Google. I hope the Google's presentation goes really well today, Bridget.
You know, that Google Photos app is one of the best things that they've come up with recently, and they took the guy in charge of that and started making him try to fix messaging apps, because I told you there was like 17 Google messaging apps or so, I mean, more or less. So I'd be interested to see if they're at a place ready to talk about what they've done to make it more simple. We'll see.
Well, perfect. Thank you so much. She's Bridget Carey. You can find her at CNET.com or on Twitter at Bridget Carey. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks. Talk
Bye,
to you
Bridget. All right, we'll get a quick break in and then some news and then more show, including Jesus will be with us on today's show, Wendy.
Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ, who are you, what have you sacrificed? Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ, who are you, what have you sacrificed?
This is one of my favorite musicals in all the land. My sister had the double album when the musical came out many, many years ago. I know every word to this. And Bill, I am honored and a little afraid to bring to you Jesus. He is in the studio with
us. Heath Saunders, who plays Jesus in this production of Jesus Christ Superstar, is our guest. Heath, thank you so much for coming. How are you?
Thank you for having me.
So you are the Christ. You're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're no fool. Walk across mass women pool.
Wow, you do know every word. I'm not lying about that.
This is the best musical ever.
Take that, Grease.
I never saw Grease. I won't see Grease.
Wendy saw this one. She hooked onto it. That's it for the rest of life.
This is rock and roll.
This is one of my top five favorite musicals of all time.
Yeah.
All right, let's hear your others.
Oh, gosh.
Top five.
Do you seriously want to hear my top five musicals? Okay, so my top five musicals are Jesus Christ Superstar, West Side Story, Guys and Dolls, Lacusa's The Wild Party, and Carolina Change.
Wow, you went pretty obscure on the last couple. I was sure I was going to hear Oliver from you.
Oh,
but
good
no.
God, no.
Please, sir.
Oliver is like profoundly anti-Semitic and also like misogynistic. So
there's that. There's that. Tell us about the auditioning process. How did you come to become Jesus?
Oh, gosh. This is actually one of the most intense audition processes I've ever gone through. It was, I went to some, after my first audition, there were probably six callbacks. So
six?
Yeah. I had to come in, sing. It was so originally I didn't actually even come in for just Jesus. I came in for the cover of Jesus and Judas. So they had me prepare like half the score. Like I had to be like ready to sing the entire score.
Yeah.
And I came in and I sang Gethsemane, and Tim, our director, was like, cool. And yeah. I was like, I prepared the other music too. And he's like, no, that one's going to be good. I was like, okay.
So at that point, you know, this went really well or really horribly, right?
Yeah, one of the two. Yeah. It was like, you know, scary. And then they called me back in, and they actually called me back in to sing all of the other things again. And I was like, oh, cool. Went in the second time, sang Gethsemane. And he's like, thank you. That's going to be the right one. And I was like, what is happening? Stop asking me to prepare music that you're not going to have me sing.
Yeah.
And, you know, seven auditions of that, the same thing over and over and over again. Eventually it focused on just singing Jesus track, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was good.
Did you watch the Easter presentation live on television?
Now, funny story, I was actually in it.
Really?
Yes, that's a weird
I'm sorry for not
me.
Doing my homework
no,
on
no,
that.
No, no, that's,
who did you play in it?
I was one of the apostles. I also played guitar. Go figure.
Well, you have gotten the ultimate promotion since then.
Well, it gets actually even better than that, because so I actually found out about both jobs on the same day.
Yeah,
I got the offer from my agents that on the same day, and in Jesus Christ Superstar Live on the Easter presentation, I was actually the Judas understudy.
Oh, you were.
So I now know the entire score very well.
Yeah.
My son was in, he was Judas in the LT High School production of it. He was going for the role of Jesus because he had long hair and wanted to be Jesus. Mm. He got Judas, which is a great role as well. And
some would say the better role.
Just more elaborate.
Yeah.
but there was a girl Jesus in his play. She was phenomenal.
Oh.
I have goosebumps thinking about it, and I love this day and age because things are different. This is a different version of Jesus Christ Superstar, where it's more millennial or industrial. It's a little different, where before the original was more hippie.
Yeah, it's so Tim Sheeter and Tom Scott. So Tim is our director and Tom is our designer. He did the set and costumes. Really sort of captured the essence of... You know, I think when we do revivals of shows, we have this sort of responsibility to re-engage with why we're telling that story now. And one of the things that they've done really well is create the same sort of that community thing that was the thing that made it hippie-ish in the 70s was it sort of created this. It was creating this cultish community around Jesus, and in this production, we had to find a way to keep that sense without it seeming pastiche, right? We don't want, if we just came on as a bunch of hippies, this actually happens with the musical Hair a lot, where you like see it and you're like, oh, wasn't that time funny?
Very dated.
It feels very dated.
Right.
And I think Tom and Tim have created a design that really feels like it's just the happening right now.
Is that why Jesus texts all through the show?
I do. I text constantly through the show. I'm only. actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I should have asked them if I could take my phone out.
Heath Saunders is with us. He plays Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar over at the Lyric Opera, lyricopera.org. Get tickets. I have to get tickets. I can't wait to see it. You've won some awards.
Gosh.
Pretty amazing.
In my life, I have been told that I'm okay at what I do, which is nice. It's nice to be
told.
But
the awards validate that, don't they, to some extent? What were the awards that you won?
I actually wrote a musical that was in the New York Musical Festival in 2016.
That's fantastic.
And the musical that I wrote, which I actually wrote with my mother and star in opposite my brother.
Family affair.
Yeah, well, and then we actually have we have two other identical twin sisters who are also actors, one of whom is in Cursed Child on Broadway right now. Like,
it's look at this family.
It's
Bill.
A whole thing.
Wow.
But we actually that musical that I wrote like won Best Musical in the festival, and
that's outstanding.
My brother won an acting award, and
that's excellent.
It was fun.
Good.
Yeah. Are you super religious?
No. No, I am not.
Because I wondered how you felt being Jesus. Do you feel weird about that? Because that's the big guy.
No, it's actually a fascinating question, and a question that I've fielded a bunch recently, because it turns out people are really interested about, like, somebody directly asked me, they're like, how do you play this role and not be religious? And I actually, my feeling about it is that what we have to remember, I think that being religious and being a storyteller are not... particularly directly related in the way that we necessarily think of them as. So my big thing is the question at the core of Jesus Christ Superstar isn't actually, is Jesus the Son of God or not? That's not actually in question. And to make this, to ask that question about the story is a little bit like if you were to read, say, Harry Potter and be like, but was Harry a wizard?
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, he was a wizard. That's what the story is. Are you missing something about that? And actually, that's how I deal with Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar, which is in the story, I am playing the Son of God, and the Son of God has made this contract, and he's going to do these things because that's the story we're telling. There is no... The debate about the veracity of that story is sort of unrelated to the telling of that story.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me as a performer, as a storyteller in my own right, I'm actually very interested in what the story has to say about humanity, not what this story has to say about religion. Because I think at core, the story of Jesus is really about human capacity for divinity. Mm-hmm. It's about our ability. The fact of the matter is that this man, Jesus, who even in the doctrine is 100% man, is capable of sacrificing everything for the betterment of everybody in the world. Mm-hmm. And that story has such value because it implies not that we are all divine, although, you know, doctrine, whatever you believe in that regard. The story is actually about all of us have this capacity for self-sacrifice and for divinity. And that, for me, is the sort of anchor of the story. It's not about... I'm not interested in a conversation about, you know, what happened in his time,
yeah, right.
Who this person was, what was actually going on. I'm interested in why we're telling this story now.
Do you put this much justification into every role you have, or is this one different?
I do it in... If you get to know me at all, I do this for basically every... Like,
yeah.
You can talk to me about basically any topic, and I will be like, now that's interesting, Kanye West.
Right.
I mean, it's... That's sort of my... Yeah, that's my MO.
That's excellent. All right, let's take a quick break. Heath Saunders is here. He plays Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar. We'll give you all the information on how you should see this fantastic show. That's coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Jesus is here. He is Heath Saunders, and he is playing Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar. It's getting rave reviews. LyricOpera.org. You can go to JCSuperstar.org. And we have somebody who wants to tell you how great you were.
Oh.
Debbie's on the line. Hi, Debbie. What'd you think?
Hi. My name is Debbie from Tinley Park. Oh, gosh. The show was phenomenal. My daughter and I went on the 29th. I've been a huge fan. Wendy, you said something about your sister having the album. I have the Brown album.
Yep, the double album.
Play it all the time. And I just thought the Gethsemane song was just, like, crazy good.
Oh.
And I mean, I'm Catholic. I think it's got a wonderful story. And I actually used it to teach my children when they were growing up, you know, about the story of Lent, you know, during Lent and whatnot, and my kids love it. And I just have one question. Why are some, not a lot, why are some of the lyrics changed a little bit, like the ones...
You mean from the album?
Yes, like, God, thy will is hard, and you hold every card, mm-hmm. And then I think he sings, God, thy will be done.
Take your only son, yeah.
Yes.
Did they update the lyrics? What happened?
Yeah, so Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber have actually been updating the show periodically since they wrote it originally. So
yes. There
are specific lyrics that have changed that the really useful group, Andrew's company, requested that we do those changes in this show. And we actually, there was a whole conversation about, because I too know the original album, so I actually was, it was hard for me to switch in my head to, there's another one when I say, but you live a lie, or it used to be, but you close your eyes. Yeah,
yeah,
there's all these like little tweak changes that have happened over the years.
And one of them was like, it used to be, what you have done will be the saving of Israel. What mm-hmm. you have done will be the saving of everyone.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if that had to do with, like, the political climate.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
But anyway, the show was phenomenal. It just, the sets, everything. You guys are just amazing, and we just so much enjoyed it. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling, Debbie. We appreciate it. I have got to get out to see this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what, you've got a black eye. Did Judas punch you after he kissed you?
Actually, no. I feel hilarious telling the story. I hit myself in the face during Gethsemane last Wednesday.
A little animated, were you?
Yeah, I'm playing guitar during Gethsemane, which is very exciting. If you've seen the show before, normally Jesus does not play guitar, and I play guitar during Gethsemane, and I have this whole very dramatic moment where I remove the guitar from my body. It would be like a guitar smash moment, but I'm not going to smash a very expensive guitar. So I pulled it off, and I just clocked myself in the face. And I had to do the last third of the song, like, basically unable to see.
It was watering. And
yeah, people thought it was like really emotional, but it was really, I was like, I mean, I'm in physical pain right now.
We had a couple of years ago, Ted Neely was sitting right over there.
Oh my God, he's in Italy right now.
He's still playing Jesus and Jesus Christ Superstar. Will you be playing the role when you're in your late 60s?
Oh my God, I am not going to answer that question.
It's amazing, right, that he could be of that age.
Where
and
is still
it playing?
Still playing?
He tours all over Europe. Europe tour right now. You can follow him on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's how I learned about it. I was like, oh.
We had Yvonne Elliman right in the studio as well. It was a whole reunion. That was at the 25th, 50th anniversary of it?
I want to say the 40th.
And Mostel was in here.
Yeah, Josh Mostel was in here.
Everyone was in here.
Oh, they just had the whole... Well, more power to him.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine playing that role at that age.
And he can still do it.
Oh, my God.
Those notes still come out.
Well, the joke I told him is the only difference is now the Last Supper is held at 4 o'clock because they're a little older now.
I always joke that when he's like, after all, I've tried for 3 years, feels like 90, it feels a little true.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. What's the one part, if you could have any part in any musical ever, that you would just love to play, you haven't played yet?
Oh, my God. The sort of default answer to that question is that it hasn't been written yet.
Yeah.
I love to do new musicals. I love to work with new writers, new directors. And so, yeah, that would probably be my answer. And hilariously, prior to this production, I would have said Jesus or Judas
really?
And Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
That would be so.
It's a coveted role.
Dream role, dream production. We're really making it.
Quick call here from Pat. Pat, we only have about 30 seconds here. Heath Saunders, also Jesus Christ Superstar, or Jesus.
Your son was sensational at the LT production. It inspired me to buy tickets last year for this production.
Wow.
I'm not at all religious. And boy, it was powerful. And I'm telling everybody, even if you're considering it, you got to go.
Wow. That's great, Pat.
Yep. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Glad you enjoyed
it. You're wonderful, Heath. Wonderful.
Thank you.
You don't have to be religious.
I mean, the show stands on its own.
And you know the story about Norman Jewison, who directed the movie version of it? He got hired because the producers assumed he was Jewish because his name is Jewison. And then after he was hired, he explained to them, now it's just my name. So thanks for the job.
Well, there was a huge controversy over the show when it originally came out because it doesn't show the resurrection in the way that the show is written.
Yeah.
And that was like a big deal. So Christians didn't like the show because it didn't show the resurrection, and Jewish people didn't like the show because it's not really very kind to Jewish people.
Right.
Romans really loved the show. It's very
lined
nice
up around the block.
but in our production, we actually do there's a very slight nod to the controversy at the end of our show. I won't tell you too much about it, but, It's interesting how we engaged with that.
Good move.
Yeah, it's
very
it's,
good move.
And I loved Alice Cooper, but I expected a little more from him. I got to be honest with you.
What I will tell you, Alice Cooper is the nicest person
I believe
I've
it.
Ever. I was like, and Alice Cooper was truly terrifying to me as a youth. I like
was he?
I was truly afraid of him, and it was bizarre because he's just the nicest guy.
He's a golf fanatic, which you'd never expect. He is. It's the weirdest thing.
I can't imagine
him in a polo shirt, you know?
It was
the normal guy. Vincent Fournier, is that his name?
Yeah.
He's like a real normal average guy.
Yeah. I was like, hey, that was a nice
And John Legend.
John Legend. John Legend is a legend.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about him. And it was actually, that was funny because when we were working with him, we had to like, you know, people are not very nice to Jesus and Jesus Christ Superstar, so we have to like be vicious. But we are all like afraid to touch him.
Really? Yeah.
So we're like, oh my God, don't hurt him. You're wearing a very expensive shirt.
I cannot wait to see it, listeners. You got to jump in on this. It's running for how long?
May 20th.
All right, you better hurry on this. I better hurry.
Yeah.
Heath Saunders, Jesus and Jesus Christ Superstar. Twitter, JCS The Musical. You can go to jcsuperstar.org, visit lyricopera.org, and hop on it because May 20th is when it ends. Jesus Christ Superstar. So nice to meet you, Jesus.
Cheers.
Jesus said cheers.
Cheers.
To me.
I did not expect that. What a surprise. we'll take a quick break, then some news, then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You know, I thought that was keep them separated. So did you, didn't you?
It sounds a little like it.
We're old.
It does sound like it.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we have repeat guests. It doesn't happen very often, but we're excited when it does. There's a series on WTTW called In Common, and the host of that In Common is Mike Leonard, and the executive producer of Leonard Films, Mary Kay Wall, is with us. Welcome back, you guys.
Thank you, Wendy. Hello.
Nice to see you guys.
Last time you were up, we were talking about, was this right when In Common started? When you started doing this?
Yeah. And this came about because, like a lot of people, I've been frustrated with problems in society, and you go, "What? Why is this happening?" And so I started thinking about people who just do something about what is happening. And I knew this man at this school, Providence St. Mel, who took it over in the late 70s. It was a crumbling building and in a really tough part of town. And for the last 40 years, 100% of the students from high school get accepted into college in a real simple way. So he made that better himself. And now, of course, it's got great teachers and all the rest. It's not all him, but he just fixed it. And he keeps saying it's simple. It's just high expectations, order and discipline, and keep raising the bar.
So why isn't this happening at other schools?
That's the question. He thought it would be a model, and it didn't become a model. I mean, certainly there are schools out there that do well, but not enough of them. And there's certainly not enough in poor neighborhoods. So it's amazing. It's this building, when he moved in, was falling apart. I did a story on the Today Show in 1982 on him, and Ronald Reagan saw the story, and he came to the school. And when he came to the school, so did a lot of heavy hitters, and they started funding.
All of a sudden, it got attention.
It got attention. Now, the building is a lot better, but they always struggle with the poverty and getting kids. It's a private school, so they charge tuition.
Yeah.
And part of that is philosophical. You know, you have a stake in the game here. But almost all the kids are on scholarships, you know, some kind of financial aid for that private tuition. But 100% go, you know, go to college, and they all get college scholarships. So
it's amazing.
It's an amazing thing. And you go into the hallways, it's perfectly quiet. And I think it's in a really rough part of West Garfield Park, but it's probably the safest block in the city.
Yeah.
Nothing happens.
Explain this, because this is the part I can't figure out, and I'm trying my best to. The model is there. You see how it can work, and then we're trying to figure out why it hasn't been emulated in other places. Is there a reason that I'm missing? Why isn't it?
There is no reason that I can think of it. I think you have to have strong leadership. He's very strong and very tough, and he stepped back from his duties as a principal, and Jeanette Butala does that now, but they follow his model, and he's very strict. I mean, there is order, their appearance has to be a certain way, and it's difficult for, you know, there are kids on the street who have to dress a certain way to survive on the street, and you go in here, and he wants you to be neat and clean and quiet and learn.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people are as vigilant and, you know, and cracking the whip that way all the time.
Do you think all schools need to be like this, though? Do you think that all kids would benefit from an atmosphere like this?
I think all kids would benefit from the order and the quiet and the discipline, no fights, things like that. I was a student who was learning disabled, and I wouldn't, I mean, they could push me, but they'd have to help me because I can't, even to this day, I can't read very well. So
you learn differently than other people.
Yeah, I learn differently. Yeah, this is a hard charging school academically. I'm sure they do have help for kids like me and all that. I didn't get into that part of the story, but I think order and discipline always in a family too. I mean, respect, right? I mean, we have fun in our house and we're goofy and but we don't trash talk. I mean, I didn't allow the kids to do that because it's respect. And I think
everyone has a role.
Everybody has that. And so they can be angry. They can be this and that. But I think it does work. Well, it certainly has worked. And it's a frustration for Paul Adams, the man we're talking about, because he thought it would be better. He thought society would be better. He thought the violence would end, the poverty. But, you know, 50, 40 years after he started. Yeah, I've been filming in the neighborhood. Mary Kay, I don't let you talk too, but filming in the neighborhood, and 25 years ago, I wasn't that worried because people wouldn't shoot a cameraman or a cop, it seemed, back then. But now it's more dangerous. All the gangs have been fractured. And so filming, and I film a lot of my own stuff, and you know, you get out of the car and you walk around, and you don't know. I mean, yeah. Someone's behind you, and of course. You can't see. So,
Mary Kay, I think last time that you guys were here, we were trying to figure out a way to best simplify what this documentary series does. And I think it was you who said it was something along the lines of ordinary people doing extraordinary things, right? Does that sound familiar?
Yes, it is. Yeah? And it's kind of a response to that whole concept of, in this atmosphere now that is so acrimonious in society, are you going to be so affected by that that you're paralyzed? Yeah. Or, you know, can you, in your own little way, affect some change? And so we're putting our camera and our spotlight on those efforts. And some might think, well, that's a drop in the bucket, and it's a pretty big, you know, bucket. But these things taken together really do make a difference. In Providence St. Mel's case, Paul didn't have a dime, in his words, to keep this school alive. But, you know, he took a leap of faith, and people came together.
Yeah.
And Mike being very instrumental in that back in 1982, and that's a great part of the story.
Oh, Ronald. Yeah. And Paul, just a little background, he came from Montgomery, Alabama. He marched with King from Selma to Montgomery. He was blackballed from teaching in Alabama because he was a marcher. He came to Chicago. He worked as a manager in a fast food thing. Heard about there's a, you know, guidance counselor job open. He wanted to get into education.
Yeah.
Took that job and then became the principal. And that when the Archdiocese closed the school, he refused to go. They closed it down and said, we're not doing it anymore. And he said, but these kids are going to college, and I've always promised them if you work hard, things will pay off. So he stayed. Yeah. And he was the
janitor. He stuck to his word.
He was the bus driver. He still cuts the lawn. He's almost 78 years old now. And, you know, it's wearying. I mean, a guy gives his life. He doesn't have children of his own. And yet the country and the world are filled with doctors and lawyers and business people and teachers that might never have done that.
There's parallels to the Father Flager story here in Chicago. You see those parallels too, don't you?
Yeah. And he's a... He's not known. You know, there's a giant amongst us out there. And all of his teachers are dedicated. They stay years and, you know, over, I think the average is like 14 years. And they're so dedicated, and they're all for the kids. And the kids prosper. And of course, their lives are changed, and their children's lives are changed. And everything has changed. Education is the way out of poverty.
Yeah.
I always wonder what attributes or what special insights that type of person has to give up their life for a goal and a movement that they want to achieve. It's amazing.
He said, Paul, when he was 14, Emmett Till was killed, and it affected him, he said, because he was 14 at the time. He said, that could happen to any of us. His mom would send him up to buy thread and dress patterns in town when he was a little boy, give him some money. And I said, why were they seamstresses? He said, no, back then the black women were not allowed to try dresses on in stores, so they made their own. And so that stuff just filtered into him. And King, Martin Luther King, moved into his neighborhood. Ralph Abernathy was a block away. So he was there when the bus boycott happened, and he saw it change. He saw people get seats in buses. And he goes, I want to have a life like that, and teaching was the way to do it for him.
Mike, when I hear stories like that, my brain wants to think that was a million years ago, but it was in our lifetime.
In our lifetime, I know. And it's cloaked now, but it was wide open. And, you know, going through, Mary Kay, you talk about the footage you've been going through on this, historical stuff.
I mean, it's been amazing. It's really shocking because I was 10 years old when this was going on, and I thought I was aware, but it was so much worse. And one of the questions we ask when we interview is, you know, didn't you think things would be better 50 years ago?
In some cases, they have.
Yes, certainly there have been great inroads, but there are many misconceptions that we still have, you know, about one another. And that's been one of the great lessons of this film. We traveled with a bus of kids who are not from Providence St. Mel, but it's an effort to help other kids who don't have the advantage of a Providence St. Mel education.
And it started by a Providence St. Mel grad.
Yes, yeah. and his father. And, you know, some of the kids look like what we'd say are hoods, and they have an attitude of, you know, coolness and defensiveness, and you think they're tough, but deep down, they want the same things we want, and they were gentle, loving people, and they're aspiring to something higher. And so, you know, Providence St. Mel then goes out into the city, these graduates, and they help other people who haven't had the advantages that, that they have had.
It's interesting to see, you know, the gangster look, and you, you kind of have to do that on the street to survive.
Right.
Which is no eye contact, you know.
Right, like I know this suburban white girl, like I even know.
Yeah. and then that's survival, but then in the world it doesn't work. You can't go to a job and slouch in your interview and slouch and not make eye contact and go, mm-hmm, yeah, right.
No one's going to hire you.
No one's going to hire you, but that might get you killed if you... on the street if you don't act like that. So it's a tough thing. But this is, as I said to Mary Kay coming in, this is a story that is a reassuring story, and it's also a warning.
Yeah.
Because you see, well, look at, this is one school that's doing this job, and that is really reassuring. But why aren't there more? And it can only do so much.
Right, because the model, the work's been done. The model is there. Why can't it be followed?
Paul just shakes his head and I don't know, and everybody keeps saying it's simple. It is simple. Just have every kid who goes to that school from the first, you know, kindergarten on, you are going to college. So expectations, here's the work you have to do,
and
here's the things you can't do. You can't disrupt anybody else because they're on that road to success.
And the, you know, the outside reputation of the discipline is, you know, that it's something extraordinary and severe. It isn't. It's just ordinary respect for one another, for yourself, for your teachers, and, you know, the ethic of hard work and rigorous academics. Those are the things that are you're going to need in life, whether you know it or not. So you're either going to be prepared for that life and have a life that is fulfilling, or, you know, you're not going to learn those lessons and you're going to be less than who you could be, or in that neighborhood get in, you know, trouble.
That's old school. You respect your teachers. You respect one another. I mean, that's
basic rules of life. It's not draconian.
Mary Kay Wall and Mike Leonard, their documentary premieres on Thursday on WTTW. That's May the 10th. It's Up to Us. We'll continue this discussion next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Mary Kay Wall and Mike Leonard have put together a great documentary, It's Up to Us. It's part of the In Common series over on WTTW. This particular episode airs on Thursday night at 9 o'clock on Channel 11 on WTTW. Guys, we don't have a lot of time, but what did you learn during the making of this?
It is up to us. There's one of the fellows who went to Providence St. Mel and became a reporter for the New York Times, Washington Post. He's a columnist at the Sun-Times, John Fountain. And he said, the cavalry is not coming.
Yeah.
We can't wait for it. We have to save ourselves. And we talked about respect before. It just starts with that. Just respect yourself. Respect the person in front of you. And that's what they've done. And it's simple. And it's old school, like what you said, Wendy. It is in it, but it works.
It did work. What happened?
Respect went away. I used to be a hockey player, and I remember you wouldn't trash talk. It was a code. And I think there are codes that work in society. I don't know what happens. I think, you know, all kinds of cultural things, whether it's rock and roll when we were kids and all of a sudden you dress like a hood or whatever it is, movies, it's entertainment. But in the real world, if you just look at somebody in the eye and you do the right thing.
Yeah.
And you know, you respect people.
The golden rule. Isn't that all it is?
Yeah.
But do you think, I know a lot of people blame Donald Trump for a lot of things. There is a political climate in the country right now that's a little strange. Is this playing into it a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, we did a project with Latinos in the summer, and a lot of them, you know, they felt unwanted.
Yeah.
And right now, that's part of the situation. And one of the church... Reverend Hatch, Marshall Hatch, we're talking about, is there a time limit to this patience,
mm-hmm.
you know, when before that? And mm-hmm. and that time limit seems to be running out because of that discourse of hate or blame. And it doesn't just come from politicians. It comes from people now. It's open. It's out there. And I think that's part of social media where people got, you know, you get brave when you're not face-to-face.
Right.
And that I think that fuels other people to say things face to face.
Yeah,
Bill, you mentioned that, you know, acrimonious political climate. It is there, but there's an urgency to now. You know, there even though politics is discouraging, in individual communities and in individual lives, kids are growing up, and I think that was Paul's, you know, modus operandi from the beginning. We don't have time to wait
for these kids. They can't be 18 when we figure this out, or it's too late. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Reverend Ackery was saying one of the saying that it was like Nazareth. They said Jesus came from this place and nothing good comes out of Nazareth. And that's what people think about the West Side. Nothing good comes out of the West Side. Yeah. Ton of good people there. A lot of good people. Some are just trapped and can't
absolutely
get out. And these kids are representatives of that neighborhood, and they're coming out, and they're doing their part to change the world.
We need to watch this. It's up to us. It's part of Mike's In Common series that you can see on WTTW. And when does it air?
That'll be Thursday night, May the 10th, this upcoming Thursday at 9 p.m. right there on Channel 11. Great to see both of you. Thank
great.
You very
we have
much
a great,
for being
great
here.
Show. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. It's Mike Leonard and Mary Kay Wall.
We'll come back sooner next
please.
Time, will you?
Yeah, please do. A quick break, some news, and then we'll find out what Steve has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch.